I read this horrific statistic, and you and I have talked about the fog of war. How many people are actually dying and being killed in the Russian-Ukraine conflict? Politico article, Russia bleeds troops for microscopic frontline gains. Initial sentence, Russia lost 281,550 soldiers in Ukraine in the first 8 months of this year.
I'll just tell you, I don't believe that for a second.
I was going to say, even if it's half of that, we lost, 54,000 Americans fighting the Vietnam War for more than a decade, 15 plus years. I mean, if this number is even half of that, the amount of life lost is just amazing.
Yeah, I don't think it is even half that. And you've seen the Institute for the Study of War, which is big time pro-Ukraine, revealed over the last couple of months, especially, that Russia has significantly changed its tactics to where they have focused on firepower to destroy the Ukrainian armed forces and minimize the exposure to their troops, and they are succeeding at that. And I have recently talked to two separate people in the U.S. military hierarchy, I'll just say, with access to classified information, and they have not revealed the exact information, but they said that that is wildly out of proportion, that that's what people want people to believe in the West so that they keep supporting to think they're succeeding. But they said it is not true. Russia is not suffering anywhere near those kind of casualties. And you see that on the front because they continue to go forward, as opposed to the Ukraine side, which is suffering those casualties. And that's why it is so hard for them to bring all these reserves and even shore up the line. And they're making significant losses in the Kupiansk and in the other areas of the Donetsk front that have really started to pick up speed here of late. So it's not, I think some people want that to sound like it's good news for the Ukraine side, but it's more bad news as far as I can see, and even more reason why we need to get this war wrapped up even more.
Well, your comments are reflective of exactly why I brought this up, because I read the statistic this morning with a huge measure of skepticism, because where do they pull these figures from? I don't know, but the volume of casualties just seemed unimaginable. Any chance that peace might break out, given that we've got some steps in the right direction between Israel and Hamas, that it might catch on between Russia and Ukraine?
Well, President Trump wants that, and he would love to have it. The Russians, obviously, they would like to have it, too, on their terms. The problem is, and I just got to be honest, the problem is that the Ukraine side and the European side don't. They only want peace on their terms, and they are pressing hard to get that. That's why Zelensky will be in town on Friday to talk to President Trump to try and really get him to release Tomahawk missiles, which Trump said he would consider doing. I hope he doesn't, and I don't think that he really is, because that would only exacerbate and raise higher the possibility of a clash with Russia, which they said this is different because a Tomahawk missile can contain a nuclear warhead where the others can't. So it's a bigger red line. I don't want to find out if they mean that or not. So I'm all for getting this deal wrapped up quickly.
Amen to that, Daniel Davis. And plus, you also pointed out in our previous conversations, if we give them Tomahawks, it's going to require American military personnel to operate them, which means we're in a fighting war with Russia, and nobody wants that. Well, the whole world was on full display yesterday. You had representatives from, I think, every country, or every continent, rather, except Australia, showing up for the initial signing of what looks like, dare I even say the words out loud, peace in the Middle East, at least between Israel and Hamas. What an amazing development. Your reaction on this? The stars clearly aligned for a variety of different reasons, which allowed this to come together. But I think the idea that you've got what I will characterize as the world, the leaders from the world on one side, and you've got Hamas obviously isolated from a global perception, they were backed into a corner.
Well, they were, and you're right that there were many, many reasons why this came together. I would say at the outset that I would not go as far as to say peace. I would say that the end of the hostilities have happened and there is a shot at peace. But even within the terms that are set out here, there is a two-phased operation. Phase one was basically a ceasefire and a return of the hostages from both sides, which has taken place. But phase two hasn't even been negotiated yet, and there are still a lot of problems to go with that. So I don't want to get too optimistic, but I am incredibly grateful and happy that the cessation of hostilities has happened, because I've always said you've got to get the killing of the innocent people stopped first to even have a shot at an enduring peace. And it's going to be really hard, but listen, we got to give props to President Trump, because it's not just that Hamas was isolated, they've been isolated. It's also that President Trump was willing to put pressure in both directions on Hamas and on the Israeli side, because as you'd certainly know, there's many on the Israeli side that did not want a ceasefire. They only wanted a military victory. So everybody had to give a little something to get here, and President Trump put the pressure wherever it needed, and then he got the support from all those countries across the world, like you mentioned. So he gets full props for that, and our great hope that this does translate into an enduring peace.
Yeah, no one is more hesitant to declare peace in the Middle East than me, sir. I've been down this road before, only to be met with disappointment. So, yeah, as I've repeatedly said on the show here, devil's in the details. One of those devils, though, talk about, you know, getting the players to negotiate, getting the border with Egypt open to allow the back and forth flow of humanity and humanitarian relief. And that was a big step as well.
Yeah, it was. And in fact, I think that they're getting nearly all the old fences and all the entrances opened up so that you can get up to 400 trucks per day for now, ramping up to 600. That's the plan anyway. We'll see if that happens. But that is a massive increase over what it has been. And also, there were only four feeding spots for the entire Gaza Strip. Almost all of the three of the four were in the far south. Now then, they're going to spread that back out. I guess the initial withdrawal line, the so-called yellow line, perhaps you heard about that. That will still leave Israel in control of about 58% of the strip. So in that remaining 42%, now more vehicles with food is going in to start alleviating and ending the suffering that was going on with the food shortages. So that's another good start on there. But like I say, there's still a lot of challenges to face, even in the near term.
Now, and you're obviously more knowledgeable and skilled at understanding what's going on, but within Hamas, they apparently are fighting amongst themselves inside Gaza. What I perceive is something along the lines of the movie The Life of Brian from Monty Python. You get the Judean People's Front, you get the People's Front of Judea, you got the Campaign for Free Galilee, and they're all splitter organizations. All of them collectively hate the Romans, and in this particular case, all of them collectively hate the Israelis, but they don't sound like they're as coordinated as I think I was led to believe, or maybe the world was led to believe, under one Hamas tight umbrella. That's why, at least I understand, this is where you are to correct me when I'm wrong, why they can't identify or locate some of these dead hostages. They don't quite know where they are because they're being held by various splitter organizations, or am I wrong?
Yeah, I'll address both of those issues. First of all, with the issue with the hostage, part of the problem, in fact, the main problem with identifying the deceased hostages is that many of them were buried or I guess just laid in some of the areas where subsequent Israeli airstrikes leveled the building and the whole thing got buried. So they don't even know where they are or can't reach them. And so that's going to take a lot of time. And you've seen all those pictures of the whole Gaza Strip basically being rubbled. So it's understandable that that's going to be incredibly difficult as far as that goes. But the second issue there, I think, bears some analysis that there have been significant firefights between Palestinians and Hamas of late because, listen, many times I think on your show I have had issue with the Israeli government about things they do. They're the ones that are dropping bombs, etc. But man, you can't go much farther without saying that Hamas has been the absolute most catastrophic thing to happen to the Palestinian people since this thing began. Because whatever they thought they were going to accomplish on 10/7/2023, the end result has been mass destruction of the entire place and the suffering of the Palestinian people. They're tired of that. They're tired of as you said, they're tired of the Israeli side who's been putting the bombs, but they're as tired and maybe more so on the guys that kept this going. So they want them to get out. They want them to leave and give them a chance to actually have some sort of deal going forward where they can have a chance and a hope for a future. And I think that if Hamas doesn't make good on its promises to leave, etc., they may find more trouble with the Palestinians than with the IDF.
Isn't that what I'll say, local conflict like within Gaza and among the leadership of Hamas or lack thereof? Isn't that sort of the general concept that the Middle East is now sort of embracing, beginning with the Abraham Peace Accords? If we all just agree that we're tired of terrorists, we're tired of fighting each other, if we just start trading and playing nice together, regardless of our differences, we're all going to benefit economically. It's going to be a powerhouse area of the world. Just put the damn guns down. So it's kind of a miniature version of the broader challenge in the Middle East, which seems that we are definitely making progress toward resolution of these conflicts between the various Arab countries.
Well, listen, the Gulf Corporation Council has been for more than a year emphatically saying a lot of those things. They say we want to have improved relations with Israel. Of course, President Trump, it's his signature thing, so he would love the Abraham Accords to expand. Israel has recently said that they want, Netanyahu specifically, they want normalized relations with the rest of the Middle East. So that is on the table, that all the main parties have an interest in doing that. But that's going to require some giving, especially on the Israeli side, because, like I said, internally, a lot of them want to have a military victory here, and then they want to get this other stuff. But the if it doesn't it result in the Palestinian people having some kind of future and a hope, and whether that's a distant possibility for a state of their own or some kind of autonomous freedom where they can thrive as a people, at least the hope of it, then the rest of the GCC probably is not going to be willing to do that. But if they can get there, then I think we actually have a broader shot. So there is a possibility, there's a path to potential peace, but it's going to take a lot of hard work. But it is there, so that is good news.
Step in the right direction and connection with the Middle East. I'll take any step in the right direction, Daniel Davis. Really quickly, you mentioned Hamas. Obviously, they've been the disrupting factor. They ruled that area. They were the governing force. Who steps in if we assume Hamas is out? What coalition or what group of acceptable people is going to step in to provide the leadership for this region?
Well, that's the what's going to have to that's part of the fly in the ointment, the difficulties, because Israel has said they have to approve whoever goes in, but the Palestinians say we want to choose who is going to lead us, not have it given by our enemy that over the last 2 years, et cetera. There is a guy named Marwan Bukhari, who is long respected among all the different Palestinian factions, and they want him. But for some reason, Israel has not released him yet, even though they asked him in this prisoner exchange that just happened. We'll see how that works out. But the Palestinians, minus Hamas, they want to decide that on their own, and that's one of the next near-term challenges.